The test is in four part, part one, part two, part three, and part four. Now look at part one.
Part one.
You will hear two colleagues, Marcus and Ella, discussing a work project. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 5. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Now listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 5.
Okay, Ella. As you know, the deadline for this project is the end of the month, so we'd better plan it well.
Yes, I've already been thinking along those lines, and I've decided we should divide this project into three phases. The pre-phase, then phase one, and then phase two, with strict deadlines involved for each one.
Given that we have to finish this quickly, that sounds good. Tell me more.
The pre-phase is the simplest. We just need to allocate a space or a place to do our planning, and this space will need to be quite big.
Sure, and we have to decide on the equipment needed as well. Remember the last project when we didn't have enough projectors to present our ideas? We lost lots of time there.
Yes, that was a bad start. That's why, after the pre-phase is finished, I've allocated a mere 3 days for phase one.
That will involve drawing the plans. We'll need Jenna to help us.
And Marco.
Yes, but not Susan. Susan is just far too busy to participate, as much as I'd like her in the team.
Let's just take Fred instead. He'll do.
Sure. Fred's not as experienced as Greg, but I agree he'll do fine for this job.
Then it's straight into phase two, collecting, collating, analysing and preparing the final report.
Can we do that in 5 days?
I think that's optimistic, which is why I scheduled 6.
That's almost a week. Do we have that much time?
We do, and with the right people, 6 days should see the job done.
Who are the people for this phase? Arthur and Rob, right?
No, Arthur's got other things to do, and Rob's on leave, so Mike alone will be the main man on this part. He's done it before, so it should be fine. But he may need some help with the smaller tasks. Someone who is good with detail and procedures.
Peter's not free at the moment, so I can arrange Leo to chip in some time and advice. Leo's very useful, particularly under pressure. And that's everything sorted. Well done, Ella. This report should certainly be ready in time.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 6 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 6 to 10.
Okay, Ella, you've done a good job with the basic time frame of this project, but what about specifics?
What sort of specifics?
Well, things like information gathering. Are we going to use questionnaires like we did last time?
I was thinking of using the internet to ask people to give their views, but you often get such silly responses when you do that. I'm of the view that the best way to find out things is to ask people directly. So that's what we'll do.
Okay, but that will take longer. We'll probably even have to do some of the work at home.
No, I don't think so, as long as we stay back at work for some after-hours meetings.
Well, that's better than coming in early. No one functions well in the morning. Also, the final report will need at least 2 appendices.
Not only that, we'll have to attach a small booklet to the end, containing printouts of the relevant parts from all the foreign websites we accessed.
That will take even more time. Are you sure we can meet this deadline?
Yep, I've worked it all out and I'm confident we can do it. Phase 1 should be finished by the 5th, leaving Phase 2 to begin about the 8th or 9th. Now, there's a public holiday on the 10th, meaning that everything should be able to be submitted on the 15th. And after that, we can relax and celebrate on the 25th when the design division gives us approval to go ahead.
Ha! You're assuming that the design division will approve this, and that's not guaranteed at all.
Oh, come on, Marcus, be positive. You know this should be approved. In fact, I'm even planning the celebration when this is all over.
Oh, yeah? What's on the agenda then?
Well, we definitely don't want to party in the office, do we? We want to get away from this place, and we're all too busy with our own lives and families to find a mutual time free for a dinner party. So I thought we'd just buy some nice expensive gifts for everyone who participated. We can just give these to the people here in the office.
That sounds fine to me, but make sure they're not too expensive. The budget department will never approve the cost.
Don't worry, I know how much I can get away with.
All right, I'll leave that with you.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear a childcare worker telling some mothers about the advantages of her centre. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 16. Now listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 16.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Stanfield Childcare Centre. Now, I know you're all new mothers and you like to cling to your children. You've certainly spent a lot of time raising them to the age of 4 and are perhaps reluctant to leave them here at our centre. Well, one of the first things you should understand is that here it is safe, very safe. Look around and you'll see that every room has padded walls. Other centres have standard painted walls, but here we have invested a lot to ensure your children will not hurt themselves when running around and possibly tripping over. This padding extends around all corners. That is, the areas most likely to bruise and cut your active little child. So, you can rest assured that any accidents of a physical nature are not likely to happen here. Now, you don't want to dump your child at this centre and let them waste their time. You want them to learn, and that's one of the greatest assets of our establishment. Our staff are not only trained childcare workers, but all of them have a special skill which they can impart to your child. Whether it be teaching the ABC, some basic mathematics, artistic skills, or physical education. We are particularly known for our preschool literacy program and have a wealth of learning toys specially designed to develop your child's potential. Of course, one concern many mothers have is that in environments such as these, colds and flus and other viral nasties can be easily spread around. It's a very legitimate concern and one which we take seriously, and we pride ourselves on our precautions. For a start, unlike most centres which clean with standard detergents, we disinfect every service at the end of every day using a special disinfectant wash. Some places just wipe surfaces daily with a damp cloth, but not us, and that's just the start. We also physically check your children when they arrive every day. And if we feel your child is sick, we ask him or her to wear a face mask to ensure germs are not transmitted. If your child is noticeably sick, then we ask you to take them back home to recover. This might sound a little unkind, but we hope parents can understand that these measures are for the benefit of all.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 17 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 17 to 20.
Now at Stanfield Childcare Centre, we have excellent childcare officers. And let me briefly introduce them. We have Susan, Andrea, Bella, Kathy, Lisa and Liz. They're all fully trained and come with some individual assets which make them even better. Bella, for instance, knows children very well, having worked here for 5 years, and Kathy has her own family, 2 little girls. So she can talk to you with first-hand knowledge of what it's really like to raise children. But getting back to Bella, she often relaxes here after work, spending long hours chatting to parents, as does Kathy, in fact. But in terms of hours, nothing can compare to Andrea, who will sometimes spend the night here, staying in our overnight room. Why? Because this centre is very friendly and simply a great place to be. Bella, for example, used to be quite shy herself, but now is marvellous with the little kiddies, as outgoing as any of them. We let Kathy, though, deal with the particularly quiet and introverted children, since having her own family, she knows what can really bring them out. Of course, what better way to do this than with yummy homemade cakes? And Kathy often gets these from Bella, who can make some of the best in town. Yes, everyone here brings something special, which is why we're one of the best childcare centres in the business.
That is the end of part 2.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part 3.
Part 3.
You will hear two students, Dylan and Emily, discussing the techniques they use when listening to lectures. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 24. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 24.
Hi, Emily. What did you think of that lecture?
A bit hard to follow, but I have some good lecture listening note-taking strategies which really help, so I can review the lecturer's message later.
Lecture listening note-taking strategies? Review it later? That sounds interesting. I must admit, I struggle a bit to take down the gist of what I hear. Look at my notes.
Well, I can see a basic problem immediately. You're writing full words, such as century, when all you need is a C. And don't write increase, just draw an up arrow. And why write thousand when a TH will do?
I see. Just use symbols. That's not a bad idea at all.
It's the most basic strategy, allowing you to record information at a faster pace. These lecturers can talk faster than others too, so you don't want to waste any time. But you need to be very familiar with your set of symbols.
Why?
Because you'll have to look at these notes days, weeks, or even months afterwards when you begin writing your essay. So you'll need to be able to interpret them at a later stage.
I think I can do this, even by looking at your notes. Immed must mean immediately.
But regarding the lecture as a whole, I knew the professor would be giving a set of specific recommendations and comparing two alternative approaches. So I formatted my page in advance, adding the features consistent with the nature of what I was going to hear.
I think I need an example of what you mean.
Well, look at my page. Before the lecture, I drew large headings saying recommendations. You should always draw these. And I drew a table saying approach 1 and approach 2. At the end, I drew a flowchart, as obviously the final recommendation would be a step-by-step approach. Then I was prepared in advance to simply fill in the spaces.
Wow! Now that's clever.
before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
Your advice about note-taking sounds great, but I still have one question, Emily. How are you able to design your page in advance? I mean, how can you predict the nature of the talk and know which design is likely to work best?
It's rather obvious when you think about it. What's your next lecture about?
Legal studies.
Well, that suggests to me that you'll need a flowchart, since the judicial system has a very logical do this first, do that second approach, which must be followed in that order. You know, all the processes that happen in the courtroom and the procedures that must take place to ensure complete legality.
Sure, that's the way law is, very linear and orderly. But what about culture studies? That's just a mass of comparisons of different cultures.
Which tells you that you'll need a table where, in tabular form, you can efficiently write down information.
But often the lecture's not that simple. The professor throws in a really complex mix of ideas.
Then use a spider graph, like the web a spider makes, where there's a central idea around which you attach all the associated thoughts and ideas and impressions.
I see. I think I understand. And that would be very quick too, very efficient. I like that. But what about management theory? How would you approach that?
The same as with culture studies. I'd use a network, which is basically the same as a spider graph, linking thoughts, although this time there are directions involved. It is this element that makes it different, the fact that the thoughts go one way and not the other.
Okay. Has directions. It sounds logical. And what about the other subjects, such as political science? There's no predictable order to that.
Well, for that, I just put my notes in a line, that is, in linear or straight line fashion, and these notes would use symbols, of course, to save time.
Okay, that just leaves mass media.
For that, I wouldn't have any special design at all. As you say, sometimes it's impossible to predict in what way lecturers will present their information, in which case the best you can do is pre-write headings, but not specific, just general, as in main 1, main 2, sub 1, 2 and 3, and so on.
Okay.
But always be prepared to adapt to the nature of the talk, using any one of the other methods if it becomes appropriate at the time.
That is the end of part 3.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part 4.
Part 4.
You will hear a lecturer talking about caves. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 33. Now listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 33.
If there is one natural feature which has long fascinated man, it is caves, those natural underground spaces into which people can enter. No known cave in the world can exist without it being extensively explored. Whether it be in remote areas, such as the Clearwater Cave in Borneo, or immensely long and difficult, such as Mammoth Cave in America. Or perhaps the most challenging, those caves below the water table, full with water, in which case the exploration is known as cave diving. Whatever the case, if the caves are known, as complex and difficult as they usually are, they will be explored. The formal name for the study of caves is speleology and involves many disciplines such as chemistry, geology, biology, and cartography, or the science of making accurate maps, since the largest caves can be hundreds of kilometers long and highly complicated. If the exploration is just for fun, the activity is known as caving. But with the difficulties and dangers involved, the average caver is often involved with one of these speleological sciences. As for the number of caves in the world, research suggests that only a fraction have been found and documented, mostly in the areas in which caving has long been a popular activity, such as in America, France, or Australia. China, for example, has huge areas of limestone bedrock, prime material for cave formation, and logically must contain among the largest number of caves in the world. Yet only few are documented due to the lack of interest in caving there. Thus, as exploration continues, new caves will be discovered, and it is likely that the numbers could radically change in the future.
Before you hear the rest of the lecture, you have some time to look at questions 34 to 40. Now listen and answer questions 34 to 40.
With caves being such mysterious and intriguing places, the obvious question concerns how they form. The most common cause is the effect of slightly acidic water in a process called dissolution. Here, water seeps into the ground and down through rock masses. If this rock is soluble, the water dissolves some of it, and over time, the passage expands to become a cave or cave system. The largest and most common of these involves limestone, although other materials are possible, including gypsum, marble, and even salt. Now, if the cave is formed at the same time as the rock, it is called a primary cave, and the most common of these are lava tubes. When lava from volcanoes flows downhill, the topmost surface cools and solidifies first, leaving the hotter lava to continue to flow beneath. If most of this eventually flows out, a hollow tube is left. The country, Iceland, has some excellent caves of this type, and even far-flung Australia has a few. Finally, there are sea caves, formed from waves pounding into coastal cliffs and eroding into fault lines or softer rock. These caves are usually the shortest, about 50 meters at most, since the erosive action of the waves can only reach a certain distance. However, it is limestone caves which will always be the most interesting. This is due to the presence of limestone formations. As the groundwater seeps downward through the ceiling of the caves, it encounters a different pressure and temperature, causing it to deposit a small amount of its dissolved calcium carbonate. Over time, through the action of millions of drops, this deposition process results in ever-growing masses known as stalactites, if hanging from the ceiling, or stalagmites, if growing from the floor. Alternatively, the water may flow over a large surface of rock, forming flowstone, and with other sorts of processes, can result in beautiful milky white formations of astonishing complexity. One of the best examples of this, as well as of what surprising discoveries may yet await, is the Lechuguilla Cave in New Mexico. In the 1950s, some cavers heard the sound of wind underneath some large boulders on the cave floor, a clear sign of a deeper passageway. It took until 1984 for a group of cavers to gain permission to start digging, and 2 years later, in 1986, they broke through into a walkable passageway, unlocking one of the longest cave systems in the world, the deepest in America, and some of the most beautiful formations ever found. Unusually, many of these were yellow with sulfur, suggesting that the caves were a result of hydrogen sulfide from nearby oil deposits. This was forced through fracture lines, combining with existing groundwater to form sulfuric acid, dissolving the limestone from the bottom up instead of the normal top-down seepage, which characterizes most limestone cave formations.
That is the end of section.
That is the end of part 4.